I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. Today is May 1st, 2020. This meeting is held in accordance with the Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. I am State Representative Rick Hansen, and I have the privilege of chairing the House Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division this biennium. Members, just a few reminders on guidelines. All committee discussion will go through the chair. If you want to be recognized, please use the raise your hand button. For those members on the phone, please use *9, and that should activate a raise your hand symbol. Other members should realize, those on the phone, there will be a bit of a lag when *9 is pressed, as we saw earlier. That should activate the raise your hand symbol. If you are not getting called on, please send an email to Committee Administrator Peter Strohmeyer from your House account. Please mute yourselves so we can reduce any background. All voting will be done by roll call taken by the committee legislative assistant. The exception will be the minutes for the meeting. Please try to limit the noise in your workspace during the roll calls. Members are expected to unmute themselves when voting and when called upon by the chair. The CA and the CLA may mute members if their mute is left off and if there is background noise. The clerk will take attendance by the roll.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Claflin. Representative Claflin. Representative Fabian.
Present.
Representative Backer.
Backer, present.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Present.
Representative Green.
Here.
Representative Heintzman.
Here.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lewick.
Present.
Representative Morrison. Representative Morrison. Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson. Representative Purcell.
Here.
Representative Sandell. Representative Sandell.
Sorry, here.
Yeah. Representative Sundin.
Present.
Representative Tice. Representative Tice. Representative Wagenius.
Present.
Representative Claflin.
Present.
Fifteen members present.
Clay, I just had a text that Representative Morrison was here. Could you call her? Could
yep.
you call through the remaining members again one more time?
Yep. Representative Morrison.
Here.
Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson. Oh, I see your hand. Representative Nelson is present. Representative Tice. Representative Tice. Okay. 17 members present.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Strohmeyer.
Hi. Could Mauro Biso please identify themselves? Mauro Biso, Can you please identify yourself? If not, I'm going to put you to the waiting room because I don't, if you're not calling who you are.
And Clay, did you get Representative Purcell?
Yes, I have him marked as present.
A quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Friday, April 24th, 2020. Representative Becker-Finn, would you like to move the minutes?
I would move those minutes, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion on the minutes? Any discussion? This can be a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Aye. The minutes are approved. Thank you. The next item is House File 3376, Representative Wozlawick, the trichloroethylene use prohibited. Representative Becker-Finn, would you move that House File 3376 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
And then Representative Becker-Finn moves that House File 3376 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Wozlawick also has an author's amendment. Representative Fisher, would you move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE1 to get the bill in the form that the author would like.
Representative Fisher moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Hanson.
Aye.
Claflin.
Aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Backer. Backer.
Backer votes aye.
Backer votes aye. Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Fish, Eklund. Mm-hmm. Eklund.
Aye. Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Fisher.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Heintzman.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
Lewick.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison.
Aye.
Nelson. Nelson. Purcell.
Purcell, aye.
Purcell, aye. Sandell.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Tice.
Aye.
Genius.
Aye.
Nelson. I know he's present. Is he muted? Well, he was present.
He is present, but he's having a hard time voting. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get it in or not, or unmute his phone.
Okay. Well, as of right now, it's 17 ayes, 0 nays.
Give him just a moment.
He's trying, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson.
He seems to be having some technical difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Representative Fabian, could he maybe send an email to Peter? Can we get a message to him? An aye or nay?
I think I hear him. Nathan, can you hear me? Nathan, can you hear me?
Yeah, there, I got you.
Okay.
What are we voting on?
The DE1 amendment for House File 3376.
Okay, I lost connection there in a second.
Current count is 17 ayes, 0 nays.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. 18 ayes, 0 nays.
The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Wozlawick, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 3376 is a bill that's been a long time in the making. We first heard about the issue of TCE more widespread across the state in January of last year, when a company in my district, Water Gremlin, was found to be emitting high levels of the chemical into the community over about the course of about 17 years. And they were emitting high levels above permitted levels. And this is a chemical that can cause cancer and birth defects. It's a very toxic chemical. It's a very bad chemical for human health. And when we found this out and we started learning more about how this chemical works and what it does, we really thought that it was a good idea to try and pursue a ban on this chemical. There are replacement chemicals that can be used for most of the purposes that this chemical is used for. So we thought it was a good idea to start that process. And passed a ban off the House floor last year, didn't get it completed. So came back this year. We've been working since last session with the Senate and the Chamber of Commerce and the MPCA and the neighborhood group and the House together to get a compromise bill. And the language that we that in the DE is the compromise language that was passed by the Senate yesterday. So that's what this bill is. I do just want to read the statement from the neighborhood group. This is the group of folks that we worked with that worked really hard and pushed really hard for us to get to this point. And I want to thank them for all of their work. And I just want to read a brief statement that they submitted. It is part of the written testimony, but I wanted to read it for folks today too.
Proceed.
House File 3376, which will be known as the White Bear Area Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group Ban TCE Act, has set forth a ban on TCE, which is a nasty carcinogenic chemical that should have been banned long ago. What happened to the citizens of the White Bear area and to many other communities in our state is heartbreaking. This ban ensures it cannot happen again in my community or others throughout the state of Minnesota. This legislation shows what a group of four determined citizens can achieve, along with the amazing support of legislators, regulatory agencies, and other local elected officials. We've worked together tirelessly, in a bipartisan way over the last 16 months. Setting out to make right what we learned last year had been going wrong for more than 17 years. The impacts of the TCE exposure that happened in the White Bear area are still not fully known. We do know our air, water, and soil were polluted far beyond the confines of the permit that should have governed the actions of a bad corporate neighbor. We know there is a TCE vapor plume under the building, and we know there is 1,4-dioxin in the water, a byproduct of TCE. Many tests have been conducted. Many remediation actions have occurred. There is still much that needs to be done to reconcile what happened, to protect our citizens in the future, and to clean up a terrible mess. The costs associated with this situation are profound. Tangible financial costs, intangible costs, and impact to human health are still coming to light. This bill is an amazing step forward, ensuring the actions of a bad corporate neighbor cannot recur in the future anywhere in the state of Minnesota. If this bill is passed, Minnesota will be the only state in the union to have passed a TCE ban, which is huge. But we Minnesotans are leaders in this and many other examples. We look forward to other states following Minnesota's lead on this necessary ban. This bill is all about protecting human health and the environment. In the midst of the COVID-19 crisis that has changed all of our lives, it provides assurance that our elected officials are indeed putting human lives at the top of agendas. I'm so proud to be part of the group who can be credited for making this happen. I'm grateful for the meaningful action and support of our state representatives, senators, regulatory agencies, and other elected officials. It is, however, important to recognize this victory came about through the determined, focused efforts of our strong, committed bipartisan team, the White Bear Area Stakeholders Group, and a tribute to the fact that regular citizens have a voice, can make that voice heard, and can stand together with those who have the power and authority to enact meaningful change. This was written on behalf of the Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Board by Sherry Smith, who is a Wiper Lake resident and a board member. So with that, I just want to conclude and say I hope that you'll support this bill. As I said, it's been a long time coming, and we've put a lot of work into this bill to get it to the point where we could pass it in a bipartisan fashion, so I hope you'll support it moving forward.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question is for Representative Wozelek. I'm wanting to know, you mentioned in your testimony, Representative, that there was a previous bill. Compromise, and I'm just wondering, what are the differences between previous language versus what we're voting on today?
So I think you dropped out a bit on there, but your question was, what are the differences between the two bills?
Yeah, between the previous language and the bill that we're looking at today. A call came in, and unfortunately it jumps over, so I apologize for the audio problem.
Representative Lozano.
Just explain the difference between the two bills.
Yeah, so the difference is really, this is a more nuanced bill. So the bill that we passed in the House was just, it was a TCE ban, and it was a much broader ban. It didn't have the specifics about sort of the processes that the companies are using with this chemical. And it didn't have, it was just a broader ban, and this is a more nuanced version with different sorts of deadlines and extensions for companies that need extra time, as well as some language around replacement chemicals, trying to ensure that those are less toxic than TCE. We don't want to get rid of one chemical only to replace it with something that's worse. So there's some language in there for that. And there's also a chunk of money in there to help some of the small businesses, most of the ones that are left that aren't already transitioning off TCE, through the money that we put in last session to help the MPCA have companies do that. Most of those are small businesses, or a good chunk of them. So we wanted to ensure that there was some funding there to help them in this process, whether it's finding a different chemical or some different equipment they need to use. So that's kind of the difference. We had worked on a similar bill that had gone to conference committee that was similar to this bill that we have here today, but that one didn't make it out of conference committee. So we had already done some of the work to make the bill a little more nuanced, but this was kind of the final steps in the negotiations between all the parties.
Representative Heinzman, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's fine for now.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wozelek, curious to know how is the date of January, is it January 1? Yeah, January 1, 22. Did that change from last year's bill to this year's bill?
If I remember correctly, there were a couple different dates. I think the actual date for the enactment got pushed back a year, and then a year and a half. I think it's June now instead of January. And so some of the other dates were pushed back according to the fact that we had pushed back that date to when the ban actually goes into effect, and when the PCA doesn't have it in permits anymore. So things kind of got pushed back according to the fact that the bill didn't pass last year, and that we wanted to allow a little bit more time given what's happening right now with COVID, but also knowing that these smaller businesses might need to get some financial help to do that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wozelek, I see that the bill, there are some exceptions or some exemptions for small businesses under 500. How did you arrive at the number 500?
Representative Wozelek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that definition is, I'm not sure where it comes from, but it's if it's a statute or a rule, but there's a definition set somewhere that defines small businesses as 500 or under employees. And so we went with that definition because it was defined elsewhere that people could reference.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm curious to know why a hospital or a quote academic medical facility would be exempt.
Representative,
if these are harmful chemicals, I'm kind of confused by that.
Representative Wasilowicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there are some facilities, University of Minnesota and Mayo Clinic, for example, who use small amounts of this chemical in some of the research that they're doing. And so we didn't want to have them not be able to use these. It's not large amounts. They're not putting out large amounts of emissions. If I remember correctly, I don't know that they're putting out emissions at all. So it's really just to ensure that those sorts of facilities that may be using small amounts of it, it is a degreaser. So there's a possibility that it could be used in some sort of medical research that's going on. And so we want to make sure that those facilities that are using it, we're not taking away that opportunity, knowing that they use small amounts and they're not putting a lot out into the environment.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then Representative Wasilowicz, I'm curious to know, if they're just using small amounts, why wouldn't you give other businesses an exemption if they're just using a small amount that would be equal to what they're using at the University of Minnesota or Mayo?
Representative Wasilowicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, so there actually has been discussion when the TCE, the report that the MPCA put out, I think it was in January of this year, had talked about a whole host of companies that use different amounts. And there are some companies in there that even create TCE, the byproduct. And so what the bill is trying to do is to go after those companies that are using TCE and emitting TCE. So it may be a small amount, but the fact that it's going outside of the facility is really the key there, is that it's going out into the environment and could have potential negative impacts on human health. And it's doing so in these are the larger, the smaller of the larger, if that makes sense. So the largest emitter of TCE in the state was Water Gremlin, and they're no longer using TCE. And so now we're trying to go after some of the smaller users, but still folks who are emitting it into the environment. So that's what we're doing. And the medical facilities and the hospital facilities are really, it's kind of a different way that they're using it, and it's not being emitted at the same levels.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then Representative Wasilowicz, if some business in the future found a useful use for the TCE, what would they have to go through to get some sort of relief to be able to use it in a small quantity?
Representative Lawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So they would not be allowed to use TCE in a permitted way. So my understanding, the way that MPC does their permit process is that it has to have a certain level before they even need a permit for that chemical. So if they're using a teeny tiny amount, they may, I'm not 100% clear on how the permit process works, but my understanding is that PCA would not be issuing a permit for them to use TCE, to emit TCE, if that were something that they were looking to do. So there are, if you look in the bill, there are other exceptions for companies, for example, that have it on site or that move it around and that sort of thing, that aren't necessarily emitting it. The goal here is really to get at those companies that are emitting TCE into the environment, given what we know about its impact on human health.
Sure.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last question. I'm just curious if MPCA is online to testify. I'm curious to know. I have one question for them.
Why, yes, they are, and they've been waiting patiently to testify.
I figured that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Public Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I think Representative Wasilowicz covered most of it, but I will just say that I agree with her that the highly motivated citizen group in the that live in the White Bear Lake area were a key factor in bringing around the compromise that passed off the Senate floor yesterday. I believe it was 66-1, and that is before you today. There was a lot of work put in by the citizens group, by Representative Wasilowicz and other legislators. Also, of course, the many other entities that were engaged in. We've done a lot of work with our study, and so we're just happy to see this language here today. It's a really good compromise. I'm happy to take Representative Fabian's question.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. I appreciate you being on here today. Are you comfortable with the timelines, both for as the regulator and then also the regulated parties? I've heard some concerns that the timelines are not workable.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Fabian, part of what you said was garbled to me. So I think, are you asking me about the timelines that changed and are we comfortable with that change? Yeah, so initially when the bill was begun to be spoken about for this session, we realized we needed to obviously move out from the January 2021 to January 2022. And then the additional to June, the 6 months, was also, it was added on the Senate side. Yes, we feel the timelines are workable.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm done.
So we have Representative Green, then Representative Becker-Finn, and then Representative Fisher. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably for Ms. Gauthier. I'm looking here, and on the small business that gets an extra year, but what happens then if they don't, if they haven't found a replacement within that year? And so my question for the MPCA is there anything out there right now that looks like it could be a potential replacement for these products?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the question, Representative Green. There are many different things that entities that have been using TCE. There's many different ways that they have been transitioning to something else. As we reported in our report in January, they are replacing it with alternative solvents, with sometimes they are using different equipment. So for the small businesses, it was important to everybody that they have adequate time to transition. And as you may know, the legislature gave the agency money last year to start working with industry, with businesses on an individual basis, on a voluntary basis, to help those that wanted to transition off TCE. And we identified about 115, maybe a couple more have been added since last fall, but about 115 entities that were using TCE. We ended up finding out that quite a few of them were emitting TCE, but not actually adding it to their process as an input. So we are just working with the entities that are purchasing TCE, putting it in their process and emitting it. And of the list of about 50 of those that we had identified, we are down to now that only 10 or so, we think only 10 entities still need to transition off TCE to comply with this ban. And so we know there are many other options out there because at the speed of which the 40 or so other entities that were using TCE, they've transitioned off relatively quickly since last fall till now. Many of them had already stopped last fall because they kind of saw what was happening in the legislature and decided to make the change. So we're confident that we'll be able to work with those final 10 and find solutions for them. I would note in the language that allows the existing revolving small business loan program at PCA to be used for this purpose, that there is language that also just for these businesses and these loans, they would be zero interest and they can also include environmental consulting services along with equipment. Normally that loan program is just equipment, but this bill for this purpose allows it to also cover environmental consulting so that these businesses that still need to transition off can get the help that they need. And those are zero interest loans for this purpose. I hope I answered your question.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, kind of, but you raised more, but I might talk to you offline on some of those. But if the medical industry in Mayo is going to be able to keep this, obviously this works better. These products work better than the other stuff that's out there. And so I'm curious about that. But I'm going to probably end with just one more question here. When you get the new chemicals that are going to be used, has there been a lot of studies done on those? Because the one thing that concerns me is that I'm dealing right now with an EPA issue where they banned DECON, and the only alternative for decon then was, I think it's called bromethylene. And the bromethylene has turned out to be much worse than the decon in certain instances as far as being deadly to the, you know, the animals that that eat the rodents, basically, that die from it. And so I'm wondering if there's testing being done, and it's just a little, it seems a little premature to me to be banning this and then giving someone a year, and then if there's not anything that's acceptable, what do they do then?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if this bill is passed into law, then it takes effect. The ban is June 1, 2023. So right now it's mid-2020. So that's 2 years. And then these companies can get one more year. So that'd be 3 years from now in order to comply. And so I don't have a list of, I do know that there are many different substitutes and alternate chemicals or processes. It really depends on the situation, what is being produced or manufactured, et cetera. We have, yes, our staff has a list of some of the more common alternates to PCE, and I don't have that with me right now, but I'd be happy to supply it. And so we think that since about, well, the majority for sure of the 50 or 60 companies that were using TCE with an input, we're down to 10 now that still need to replace it. And the other 40 to 50 have been able to do that very easily in a number of months. So we're not anticipating that industries won't get there. And if they don't get there, then there are processes we could write into their permit, a schedule of compliance, for example, or other alternate means to make sure that they get the time they need.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say thank you to Representative Wozlik for putting this out there, more importantly to the citizens group that worked very strongly, forging a huge bipartisan committee to put this together. And when you take a look that it passed the Senate by 66-1, I think they were very successful and winning the support of the Chamber of Commerce. Without ordinary everyday citizens working hard together like this, this bill would not have been able to come together as quickly it has. I would like to say thank you to the citizens. Thank you to the commissioner for doing the work. And I think this is a bill that deserves all our support. And I look forward to us voting unanimously and getting it to the House floor. Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Yes, Chair. I have two questions. The first question deals with, has all the parties to this compromise, have they signed off on this compromise? That's my first question.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the House and Senate and MPCA and Neighborhood Group are 100% in agreement. The Chamber of Commerce, if you're considering them a party, I think they still have a couple things, minor things they disagree with, but this bill is started with their language. So in the Senate, the first bill that was introduced was actually written by the Chamber. So we've moved since then, working with Commissioner Bishop with MPCA to outline some of the things in that original language that the MPCA was already doing. For example, they already had identified the companies that were using TCE, so there's no longer a reason for one of the pieces of that bill was to send out notices and ask people. And so there was some work that has already been done by the PCA because of the money that we gave them last session. So there are bits and pieces and some substantial chunks of that original language that the Chamber had put forward that were taken out given the work that the PCA had done. So I can't say exactly where they're at on this, but we did work with them and made it clear, you know, that this is the work that's already been done. Here's what we feel is what continues to be done. And I know that the money in here for the small businesses was a piece that they really wanted to see, as well as some of the language around the extensions in terms of allowing small businesses that extra time to be able to come into compliance with this.
Representative Backer.
Thank you. My only concern, Representative, is in your introduction, it seemed to me that it was implied that everybody is on board with this. I'm a business owner, so I know how easy it is for other people to dictate what I do in my business, even though they have no clue what's going on. So my that is a concern of mine. If they've not signed out on it, to me it seems like it's one opinion much stronger than someone else's opinion. That would, I mean, based on your answer right now, it kind of contradicts what was said in the introduction. It doesn't sound like all parties compromise with this. Am I help me bridge that gap there, Representative.
Representative LaFleur.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Backer, I think the point to be made is this is a compromise bill. Nobody is 100% happy.
Representative Backer.
I understand compromise, nobody's happy, but my question was, is did they sign off on the compromise?
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't say if they signed off on it or not. I haven't been talking to them personally. They've been talking more with the Senate and the MPCA on this, so I don't know if Greta has anything to add on that, what they've heard, but I can't say they 100% like everything that's in here, but it is a compromise bill, and compromise is a thing that happens, and usually we all walk away not 100% happy, and that's the case here. It's a good, strong bill. We didn't all get what we wanted, but we're moving forward with it.
Ms. Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have anything to add. The entities that were negotiating were the House, the Senate, the agency, and the House. So all three of those entities signed off.
Representative Backer.
Okay, I have one more question. Thank you. How much money does MPCA have on hand for these loans, and what interest rates will they be, and is it capped at a certain amount? That's my second question.
Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now this is a revolving loan fund the legislature set up a couple decades ago for small businesses that need to purchase equipment for compliance with environmental regulations. So specific to this bill in the language, which I believe it's in the last section of the bill, you'll note that these loans are zero interest and that there is up to $250,000 of the existing funds. Right now, we have $350,000 available to lend. And so we discussed with several of our engineers and other entities and our small grants people who have been making these grants for decades, kind of what is the average amount that is borrowed? And we came up with about $25,000 is the average. And so knowing that there were 10 companies still on our list of PCE users who have not transitioned off PCE yet, that's how we got the $250,000. But we did not put a cap on it. The legislature did change the cap last year. We had some policy language to update this program, and I believe the cap is $75,000 per loan. So either way, I mean, I think there would be, even if people wanted to borrow more than $25,000, we would have some flexibility there because loans are always getting paid back, revolving loan fund. So the terms are, the terms, I believe, are 6 years. The interest is zero, and the cap is $75,000.
Representative Backer.
That's it, Chair. Thank you.
Representative Wozlawick, do you have any final words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for a good discussion. I just want to, again, state the importance of this to protecting human health. That has been the number one concern all along. With the neighborhood group in particular, is that they've been very, very strong on wanting to make sure that this bill protects human health. And we think it does that, and we think it does it pretty strongly. And we're here, with this bill today because of the work that's been done over the past 15 plus months with the neighborhood group and other folks. So just want to, again, thank folks for hearing the bill today and hope I can have your support.
Representative Becker-Finn, do you renew your motion?
I renew my motion to move House File 3376 as amended to Ways and Means.
Representative Becker-Finn renews her motion to that House File 3376 as amended be recommended to Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Hansen.
Aye.
Claflin.
Aye.
Fabian.
Mr. Chair, is a reluctant no. I wish that we were doing things in a different way. No.
Backer.
Backer votes no.
Becker Finn.
Yes.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Heintzman.
No.
Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lewick.
Lewick, aye.
Morrison.
Yes.
Nelson.
Aye.
Purcell.
Purcell, aye.
Sandell.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
13 ayes, 5 nays.
Good.
I want to make sure that we pick everybody. Clay, did we go through every, did we get everyone?
Yep.
The motion is approved and it's on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you. Members, the next bill on the calendar is House File 4554, authored by me. I will move that House File 4554 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Members, we thought last week that we would be done, but in the intervening time, the Senate did pass a omnibus bill, I think on Wednesday. And so we have compiled in this bill a number of the provisions that had already gone to Ways and Means and that have been considered and voted on already. In addition, there were other items from other committees that we added into this, plus components that had been requested for changes from the agencies. So we're starting with the original bill is the governor's supplemental budget bill. That's House File 4554. That bill is out of date with the COVID crisis. So we have a DE1 amendment, and I would like to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape so we can consider it. Is there any discussion? The clerk will take the roll.
Hansen.
Aye.
Claflin. Was that an aye?
Aye.
Claflin votes aye. Fabian.
Aye.
Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Fisher.
Aye.
Green.
No.
Heintzman.
No.
Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lewick.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Purcell.
Purcell, aye.
Purcell, aye. Sandell.
Aye.
Sundin.
Aye. Aye.
Tice.
Aye.
Wagenius.
Aye.
16 ayes, 2 nays.
The DE1 amendment is adopted. For the bill as amended, this is the Environment Natural Resources Supplemental and Policy Bill. I would like to call on Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor to walk through the items in the bill that weren't previously heard in committee recently. Now, Ms. Taylor and Mr. Hagemeyer, who would like to go first?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hagemeyer and I spoke, and since there aren't a lot of appropriations, I'm just going to quickly go through the Article 1 and we're going to skip the spreadsheet presentation, if that's all right.
Yes.
Okay.
So starting at Article 1 of the DE1 amendment, the first section is on the PCA providing appropriations. The first subdivision is from the chair's previously heard a dry cleaner bill. Subdivision 2 is from a previously heard bill providing money for the water quality standards for PFAS. Subdivision 3 is the small business loans for the TCE program that we just heard. And then section 2 is the DNR appropriations. Subdivision 1 is a version of the CRP state incentive payments that we heard previously. The funding amount source has changed to the critical habitat private sector matching account, which is why it's under DNR as a transfer to Bowser. And you also notice that the amount has been increased. And then subdivision 2 is an extension that was added to the policy bill previously. The other extension that had been added was moved to the LCCMR bill. But that was the only other change to the LCCMR bill from what we passed previously. So I'm not going to go through the LCCMR, but when we get there. The next one is section 3. This is an extension of an appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for the RIM Wetlands Partnership. This is an extension that they had requested. And then section 4 is a new section providing $350,000 from the lottery and lieu revenues for the zoos, and this would go to the Minnesota Zoo. Section 5 is a section from an Eklund bill that was extending some previously previous appropriations for ATV trails. And then section 6 is from the dry cleaner bill that we heard previously. And then on page 5, section 7, it does two different things. First, if you go to page 7, you'll see that it removes a previous appropriation from the cross-country ski account. This is from an Eklund bill. And then on page 11, you'll see another extension of an ATV trail appropriation. And then that concludes Article 1, and then I'm going to go to Article 2. And as the chair had mentioned, we're not going to point out what we previously passed. And Article 2 has a lot of the stuff that was passed as part of the DNR policy bill last week, and I'm just going to point out the new sections. And the first one is Section 1 on page 12. This is a provision from the governor's budget. It would establish a soil and water conservation fund. And then the next section I like to talk about would be on page 22. And that's section 18. This is another section from the governor's budget. It would allow the DNR to convey conservation easements on state-owned lands. Then the next section I like to talk about is on page 24. Section 25 was actually in the DNR policy bill that we just passed, but DNR did request a change to this language, and you'll see that on line 24.31. There's some additional language allowing the state park reservation fee revenue to be used for campground operations. The next section is on page 25, section 28. This is another item from the governor's budget bill. This would provide free annual state park permits to any member of a federally recognized Minnesota tribe. And the next section would be on page 26, section 30. This is another section from a Representative Eklund bill on the cross-country ski account. This modifies how the fund can be used to allow the funds to be used for developing and maintaining state cross-country ski trails without it being required to be appropriated by law, as you'll see in the language being stricken. The next section is on page 27, section 32. This is also from the governor's budget bill. It allows the DNR to grant leases on states, like certain state-owned lands, for conservation easement planning purposes. And then we'll skip ahead to page 33. On the bottom of that, there's a section 48. This is new language growing out of House File 749 from last year on the turtle seller's license. This provision would restrict turtle sellers from taking turtles in the 7-county metropolitan area under those licenses. Then the next section would be section on page 36, section 55. This would reestablish the Advisory Council on Water Supply Systems and Wastewater Treatment Facilities. This language was in the governor's budget as well as a number of different bills. This, the language in here is actually taken from House File 3928. This would previously existed. It had just expired, and this would just reinstate it. And then the next sections 56 through 60 are from the PCA's policy bill carried by Representative Purcell. It modifies some provisions governing the state cleanup of solid waste facilities. Then we can skip ahead to page 41. Section 61 is the TCE ban that we just heard previously. It's very similar to the language that was just passed out of committee. And then we're going to go to page 45. Section 64, this is from a Representative Claflin bill. This is the bill that would prohibit selling personal care disposable products labeled as flushable unless they meet certain industry standards. And the next section is on page 46. This is the PERC ban from the dry cleaner bill that passed previously. And the next section on page 48, section 68, this is from a Representative Purcell bill. This would require the DNR to establish a safety program for watercraft operators, and it sets their requirements for that program, including a special endorsement to operate a watercraft with an enhanced wake technology. The next section is section 69 on page 49. This is a new section. It extends some deadlines related to the peacetime emergency, and that it would extend by 90 days deadlines for making a land use decision, and then for holding meetings under the drainage law. And then the final section I'd point out would be just in the repealer. The paragraph B on page 50 of section 72 is a repealer from the PCA policy bill, and it just repeals a rule relating to a ranking system used by the PCA. And then, as I mentioned, Article 3 is just the LCCMR bill. The only difference is just moving that extension of the trust fund appropriation into there. And then the Article 4 is the state's lands bill, and there were no changes for all those bills. And that concludes that.
Any questions for Ms. Taylor? Members, we have a number of testifiers, so I'd like to move to them to make sure we get everybody to have their opportunity. In addition, there are a number of folks who provided written testimony, and that is available on the website, committee website as well. So I believe our first testifier is Doug Carnival with the National Waste and Recycling Association. And if each testifier could state their name for the record, and we have an aggregate of a little over half an hour left. So Mr. Carnival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief. I represent the National Waste and Recycling Association, and we have comments on Section 60 of the Delete Everything Amendment that deals with closed landfills, and particularly a section that talks about real property interests. I want to preface my remarks by saying we've been working with the PCA for some time to try and see if we come up with language that might work here. We have yet to come to resolution, but as always, we will continue to work with PCA on that score. As we've read the language, we do have concerns about it. After we've discussed it with the PCA, we have more concerns because we think there's a lack of understanding between what the language says and what it intends to do. So we wanted to bring it to your attention and the attention of the committee. As a result, we respectfully request at this time that you delete the provisions from the bill so that we can continue to PCA and perhaps even have it go through the appropriate stakeholder process like rulemaking or some other alternative rather than simply adopt it at this juncture. We have not been very much engaged in this along the way. It's important to note that the two landfill provisions in this amendment do not relate to each other. Section 60 deals with 59 deals with the freeway landfill cleanup situation, and that has nothing to do with our concern here. Section 60 is a separate issue and we think needs to be handled separately. I need to note that in its 2019 policy report, waste solid waste policy report, the MPCA said that the solid waste program should develop standard language to include in landfill closure documents that require the placement of environmental covenants on the landfill property. That's in their policy report. In prior hearings, the PCA has represented that the environmental covenant language is necessary to allow the PCA to put prospective buyers on notice that a closed facility was not for that was used for disposal purposes, and that there might be restrictions on the use of the property to protect the integrity of the cover used for the closed facility. The PCA has also said that the covenants would occur only if there's mutual agreement among the parties. However, the purpose of Article 2, Section 60, as stated by the MPCA, appears to be already addressed under MPCA rules dealing with closure procedures, which provide, quote, the landowner must record a notation on the deed to the property or on some other instrument normally examined during the title search that will in perpetuity notify any potential user of the property or purchaser of the property of any special conditions or limitations for the use on the site as set out in the closure plan and post-closure documents. As a result, we think this legislation is unnecessary because the rules already provide a situation and the ability to proceed forward with this. We will continue to discuss this with the PCA. Perhaps the way to do this is for the C&D Rules Advisory Panel to have a forum, perhaps over the summer, if we can't reach agreement with the PCA between now and the end of the session. There's a memo in your packet with more information on this, and we'd appreciate your consideration of that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Members, what I'd like to do is go through all the testifiers. PCA is next, Greta Gauthier, but I'd like her to address that question later and for her to provide the PCA testimony now, if that's okay.
Fine, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 4554 as amended, the Omnibus House Environment Natural Resources Supplemental Budget. Thank you for including in this bill many important provisions that are important to the MPCA. We have testified already on many of these items, and in the interest of time and the logistics of this hearing, I won't repeat all that testimony. I'll just touch briefly on some key priorities of ours, which include the TCE ban compromise language. Of course, we just discussed that, but it is also in this bill. Also, full funding for our PFAS study at the MPCA that is part of the LCCMR bill in Article 3. We are grateful to have that. This is very important information that we need to look at and learn about PFAS and how fast they move into groundwater and how fast they are taken up into crops. Also, our MPCA land policy bill, I'm grateful that that has been put into this bill as well. It has several key land policy items around Superfund and landfills. Most importantly, this bill has provisions related to priority qualified facility landfills. And we need those provisions in order to continue with our work to clean up at the Freeway Landfill in Burnsville. We also appreciate the Advisory Council on Water being included here. That is an important entity that all parties want returned. So those are some of our high priorities. I will say that we know that times being what they are and the economy that our budget items are not represented in the bill. We would like to work with you more on the closed landfill issues to see if we can reach some agreement there. And we also would like to talk more with the chair and others about the dry cleaning provisions in the bill. But I will defer to my fellow Assistant Commissioner Kurt Kadalka to discuss that and answer Mr. Carnival's issues later on. Also wanted to say we appreciate the funding for establishing water quality standards for PFOA and PFOS, and the ban on PFAS and food packaging, the ban on PERC, and the labeling requirement for personal wipes. We have been vocal on that and the problems that personal wipes cause, the problems and costs they cause to municipalities. With that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony, and thank you. I'm happy to take questions now or later.
Just hold till later. I will go to DNR next, Bob Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And we do appreciate the work that the committee is doing on this bill, House File 4554, which does contain many of the pieces of DNR policy language that we previously discussed, so I won't go into detail on that. We do have some concerns about some of the language in the bill, specifically dealing with the critical habitat match transfer to Board of Water and Soil Resources for CREP easements, incentive payments. The purpose of these dollars were for permanent conservation, acquiring land, and also in statute, if you read it, let me just pull that up here really quick. It's for the purchase of land or interest in land by the commissioner for permanent protection. What we're doing here now is using this $2 million to subsidize these CREP payments, which typically are 10 or 15 year easements. And in addition, Mr. Chairman, on our website, we educate people. These are voluntary donations from individuals for the license plates that they have out there. And we encourage them that it's being used for habitat, critical habitat protection, wetlands, prairies, things like that, for permanent protection. So I know other people are concerned about it as well. They'll be testifying, but that is one of our major concerns with this piece of legislation. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions. I'll be around later.
Mr. Spreck with the Deer Farmers Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Tim Spreck with me, speaking today for the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. I'm going to address the DE1 amendment as it was originally drafted with specific interest in Section 15 and 16. In Section 15, immediate notification of any escapes required. Mr. Chair, picture a scenario where a farmer's out working his deer. A storm comes up, a tree comes down, the fence is damaged, and several deer are spooked and they escape. At that time, this farmer is in immediate violation because he has not fulfilled the immediate notification. So what we're doing is we're denying him the ability, him or her, the ability to recapture that deer in the heat of the moment before it's long gone. And we're telling that person, you have to get on the phone and call. And by the time that that is addressed, the deer would no longer be able to be recaptured. So, well, currently in statute, they have up to 24 hours. This has been workable. It's something that the organization is on board with, and we would appreciate some additional consideration in this area. In Section 15.1b, this is a big one, Mr. Chair. Hunters have the ability to kill and keep an escaped deer. So in this scenario, through no fault of their own, whether it be vandalism, trees falling on a fence, storm damage, et cetera, and a deer would happen to escape, a hunter could immediately shoot and possess that deer. Mr. Chair, I want to draw your attention to the Rinky Noonan letter from attorney Gary Lestico, which addresses the constitutional rights violations that this particular section creates. And we believe this is an unintended consequence, but it does really allow a taking without compensation. And this needs to be something that this committee should also consider. We find this particular area to be specifically discriminatory against deer farmers. And in a scenario where an unscrupulous person would like to shoot a trophy buck without paying for it, and sometimes these can have values in $20,000 to $30,000 range without any trouble, that person could cut the lock And this could be done at twilight, early in the morning when it's dark. Cut the lock, open the gate, allow a deer to escape, and immediately shoot it. And at that point, there's really no legal recourse that our people have. We can't sue them for the value of the deer. What we can do potentially is call the sheriff and get a misdemeanor violation on that person for the value of the lock that they cut. That's our only recourse at that point. So we're very concerned that unscrupulous people could use this to their own advantage to create a situation where they can take a very valuable piece of property without any compensation for the owner. Under Section 16, the GPS chip or tag option, most importantly, note that no technology currently exists for an implantable or otherwise GPS tag for cervids. It's not the same as what you would expect to see on a dog or a pet. Those type of technology don't work. When we saw this bill last year and again this year, we immediately went to work to do research, and we found that there was no technology that was existing today that would be transmissible to a cervidae. So this is not workable. And the other option would be the tag. So on a deer, you have a what's called a panel tag in the ear, which contains a specific number for that deer, which is on record with the Board of Animal Health, and there's also a USDA tag. And the tag that would be required would have to be visible to the naked eye at 50 yards. Mr. Chair, with the information required on these tags, name, address, and phone number, it is virtually impossible to place that on a current tag the size that we are using. We would have to go to much larger tags. And in that case, in order to be visible at 50 yards by the naked eye, you're going to have an enormously large tag in order to be compliant with this section. Mr. Chair, this can cause irreparable damage to the ear of the deer and is totally impractical in daily actions around the farm. So, Mr. Chair, we're very concerned about these provisions. We find them to be specifically discriminatory against deer farmers. Please keep in mind that no other form of livestock is subjected to this type of statutory limitation. You don't have the ability to buy a deer license and shoot an escaped cow or other form of livestock. This is specifically discriminatory against cervid farmers. And we're very, very concerned and would like to ask that this type of legislation be removed from the bill if possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time.
We'll wait on the questions until we've got two more testifiers to go. So, Mr. Forrester.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester with Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. We represent over 250 lake associations and about 6,000 individuals and anglers, resort owners, marina owners. And I want to express support for including language from House File 4254, Representative John Purcell's bill regarding recommendations for a watercraft operator safety program, Section 68 of this bill. We believe this is a step in the right direction. Watercraft are evolving in both design and impact and are larger, more powerful, and can have more impact on our lakes and lake-based recreation. We agree with Colonel Smith's from the DNR observation at the first hearing of this bill when he noted that Minnesota has operator certification and training for every vehicle type except boats, and believe it is time to take a look at this. As our water bodies have become more crowded, I've seen less and less evidence that boaters follow or even know the basic boating safety rules, rights of way, and responsibilities for staying well clear of canoes, kayaks, sailboats, and other smaller or less maneuverable watercraft. Safety is paramount to everyone's enjoyment of our public waters, and the safe operation of watercraft will also reduce conflict among various user groups. By using science to develop some best management practices and education, and using well-established practices from trusted sources like the U.S. Coast Guard, the Minnesota DNR, and interested parties, will be able to develop a boater certification training that promotes public safety, protects aquatic environment, and increases enjoyment of all. We also wish to convey our support for the following LCCMR items, Section 55.1, freshwater sponges and AIS, engaging citizen science, scientists, Section 63.14, applying new tools and techniques against invasive carp, Section 64.1, testing effectiveness of aquatic invasive species removal methods, and 64.13, invasive rock snot on the North Shore streams. Thank you, and I'll stay on for if there's any questions.
Thank you. Colleen Satisher, Research Coordinator, Department of Ecology, University of Minnesota.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just want to thank you for choosing to include LCCMR recommended projects in 2020, and to thank you for attending to the full needs of our state in this time of pandemic. Thank you for recognizing that these projects not only deliver important information to the state, but they also spend money around the state and support people's jobs, including my own, two of my colleagues, and nearly 120 other full-time equivalent positions. We would rather be doing our jobs than looking at unemployment. I'm staff at the University of Minnesota and lead on the project called Improving Pollinator Conservation by Revealing Habitat Needs. Minnesota's 270 bee species are basically all under a stay-at-home order from hatching to adulthood every year, and yet people don't know where most of these bees live. My project proposes groundbreaking work to understand bee nesting habitat all around the state of Minnesota and to give this information to agencies and citizens so that it can be used to help ensure new pollinators emerge each spring. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Could you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, my name is Colleen Satisher.
Thank you. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we're short on time, so I'll be brief. I just wanted the record to reflect that we did have a lengthy discussion about the exact same language regarding cervids last week, and would suggest that folks go back and take a listen to that for a full discussion. I don't think we need to rehash everything, but I do want our legislative record to reflect that there is a problem, with tagged deer, unrecovered being in the wild and hunters being in a situation where their licensed hunter is out in the field, and then they're the ones put on the spot by no fault of their own. And then as stated last week, I think too that to point out that criminal laws still apply regardless of anything that we would do with this language, and that as stated by the DNR last week, this is actually not that big of a change from what they currently do. And then on another note, on a totally different part of the bill, but did want to highlight how important it is that we support the Minnesota Zoo at this time. It's my understanding they're under incredible financial stress, and we're at risk of losing that resource in our state. And so I think anything we can do to support the zoo right now is going to be incredibly important for the future of our state, not just for sort of the benefit to folks who like to visit the zoo, but the research and all the other things that the zoo brings to our state. So just wanted to point out that is included, and I'm happy to see that in the amended language. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Green, before I go to you, I'd like to have Ms. Gauthier directly answer Mr. Carnival's question on the landfill issues. And then, is that okay, Representative Green?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's fine.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm actually going to turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Kadelka, who has been doing the work with Mr. Carnival and his client.
Commissioner Kadelka. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'll just briefly talk about Section 60 of the bill, dealing with the ability of the agency to have environmental covenants in the solid waste program. These are already outlined in state law under Chapter 114E. State law does require, though, that for an agency to enter into an environmental covenant, it does need authorizing legislation in another chapter of law. And we've done this for Superfund and a few years ago, the Petroleum Remediation Program. As Mr. Carnival has mentioned, we are working with NWRA on this and have been trading back language back and forth. But the intent of the language is for voluntary entrance into environmental covenants to make sure that protections put in place at a landfill, whether it's making sure a cap is not disturbed, or if there is a plume that's stable, wells, drinking water wells are not placed in them, that is known to the next land buyer and is enforceable by the agency. We have found that those notifications previously mentioned are not effective, and during times of transfer, they are not seen as what would be an environmental covenant on properties, and they have proven to be ineffective. And so that's why we're moving forward with this approach to address what is coming to Minnesota, a number of landfills either going to close or within their 20-year post-closure care, and want to make sure that we have adequate protections as these facilities move into the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, I wanted to clarify that in our last meeting, when we discussed a lot of these issues, we never really did come to answers, and there were no good conclusions. But the policies that are in this bill really have not been thought out well, in my opinion. And as far as the vandalism goes, when we went through the numbers last time, a good share of the deer that had escaped were attributed to vandalism, and many of those deer were then again recaptured. So that's something that we need to point out. And then just another comment, as far as the zoo is concerned, I understand that the zoo is having some problems with the closures in the state, but so are a whole lot of businesses. And so if we're going to be sticking money into state institutions, then we better start thinking about sticking some money into some of our private businesses as well. Thank you.
Representative Heintzman, and then Representative Lewick is on the phone. Go to Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hopefully DNR is still here, and I could ask about the campground legislation that they were talking about that's in the bill, and maybe the commissioner could give me a little bit better idea what that does and how it may relate to campgrounds statewide being closed due to COVID, and if there is a plan, maybe relative specific to this provision, to deal with that issue.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, the language in the bill is just a technical correction that reflects current accounting practices. It has nothing to do with private campgrounds whatsoever, just our revenue tracking and spending. The guidance that is still out there is public and private campgrounds are closed to recreational camping. There's two pieces of that. Is the governor's stay-at-home order encourages everybody to stay and recreate locally. And also, there are no large groups. It's a sanitation issue as well, since many of these, all of our facilities, have commingled sanitation buildings, and we just cannot guarantee, nor can we keep them all disinfected if they were open at this point in time. So there are several factors that are applied to those decisions, and they're clearly identified within the DNR's outdoor recreation guidelines on our website and through MDH guidelines as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I was specifically referring to the state campgrounds. And I'm trying to understand, you know, if we have the campgrounds around the state, the private facilities potentially open under CDC and Department of Health guidelines for cleaning the facilities and trying to figure out what that might look like. And if that moves forward, I'm curious if DNR is prepared to follow those protocols and open up the state campgrounds as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
Members, the state is doing everything we can to open places safely as soon as possible. Once that is all clear, are we able to move forward in a fashion that will allow the campgrounds to be open? We will be doing so as soon as possible. But currently, we are under the stay-at-home executive order through May 17th. And all public and private campgrounds for recreational camping are closed.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you. I'd like to clarify that further. So I am wondering if, to answer the question, Commissioner, if a protocol is identified, a process for reopening private campgrounds, and for the public listening today, the public should know that if you have a permanent site with a fifth wheel or a camper on that location, those are open currently, as well as the showering and bathroom facilities. That's slated for opening in the next few days. So it is not completely unfeasible that the governor may look at other campground facilities that allow people to come in for a day with their own camper or unit of some kind. It's not infeasible to think that that could also open soon. And I'm just looking at this going, well, if those protocols that work for the private sector are in place and those facilities are open and they're following those systems to keep those facilities clean and usable, is DNR looking at making that available on state campgrounds as well?
Commissioner Meyer, and quickly, and then if you could provide to all committee members details about the policy relating to campgrounds.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and Representative Hyman, just really quickly, those private campgrounds do not have to open. They can open if they want to. I think that's an important consideration as well. If you go to the DNR website, right on the top banner, there's a link not only to MBH guidelines, but also to our outdoor recreation guidelines that clearly identify all of the criteria and protocols in place for all outdoor recreation, and the camping guidelines can be found there as well. I can send that link out to folks. We're in the process of updating that for when the new executive order goes into place Monday, and we can go from there, Mr. Chairman. And just briefly, we are doing everything we can to make sure that outdoor recreation opportunities are opened as soon as possible to people and in as safe as a possible manner. So once there are protocols in place that allow us to open things and the timing is right, we will be doing so as soon as we possibly can. But until then, with the stay-at-home order in place, campgrounds are closed until May 17th, if not longer.
Representative Lewick, we have 8 minutes left.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I have two quick questions. First one is for MPCA. Do we have sufficient funding at the agency to continue to defend legal challenges on the permitting processes on a variety of fronts that on the finance side?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I think there was in the governor's supplemental request an increase for legal reimbursement for legal fees for both the DNR and the PCA, and this was in regards to PolyMet and the fact that we had to hire outside counsel because every major law firm in the state had a conflict of interest. So I have to confess, I'm not aware if that provision came through in this DE amendment today.
Ms. Gauthier, there are no general fund appropriations in the bill. And my understanding is the Senate, there are no general fund appropriations in the bill.
So
it is not there.
So that is something we will have to see what happens next week when the reforecast comes out and we get a better idea of the implications of the pandemic on our state. I can talk to our fiscal staff and find out what their plan is for navigating if those funds are not available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a very serious oversight, but probably not going to resolve it here. The other question would be for the chair himself. I'm still really concerned about Article 2, Section 15 and 16. That is pure agriculture issues. Have you had direct conversations with the Ag Chair as to why this didn't go to the Ag Committee to deal with those particular areas?
Yes, I had direct conversation with Chair Poppy, and we were actually going to move this into my committee because it deals with outside the fence. So she did not want to see it.
Okay, as I understand you, you're saying that the Ag Chair said she specifically did not want to see that portion of the bill. I just want to make sure I understand what you said.
Yes.
Okay, I'm disappointed with that, obviously, too. And I for that, particularly that area, there's just no way I can support this this bill as it stands. Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point with the CWD, is it really the intention of the author of that provision that someone through no fault of their own could be out many thousands of dollars because of a natural disaster or vandalism and one of their animals gets shot?
Representative Fabian, we have almost 450,000 deer hunters in the state of Minnesota who have been paying and changing dramatically the world in which they live in. CWD is a disease, the other epidemic that we've been dealing with. And we found this year, after the rulemaking, the special rulemaking, that deer farms had a lot more CWD than was anticipated. So we know that they can be a vector. And there's a huge public cost. There has been for many years, and there will continue to be a public cost for cleanup. So a responsibility of maintaining the fence. Representative Fabian, you know, I grew up on a farm, and good fences make good neighbors. Maintaining that fence. We know there are examples when there are storms, et cetera. But we also know there are times when it's not. And need to keep the animals in the fence. As Representative Becker Finn mentioned last time, these are an animal that is wild game in Minnesota and wild game that belongs to the public that has been affected by this disease. We did debate this last time. Most of the bill that's in front of us as amended today has been heard in committee already. Many of the components have passed through other committees or were in the governor's most recent budget bill. They are going to Ways and Means so we can continue the conversation. You'll see as an example today, we actually separated out the TCE ban and ran that separately. That may be possible for other components of this bill, but we need to get it to Ways and Means, and we need to get it to Ways and Means today. I did have a call with Senator Ingebrigtsen today. I think that's a good step to start that conversation. We have a few weeks left in session. As we know, and as we talked about compromise earlier today, not everything's going to get included, but there may be things, and there may be things that change. So I would ask Representative Fabian, maybe one final comment. I know we're moving towards the end here. I know you're very concerned about this particular item, but I hope I've answered your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move on. I have a question for Ms. Gauthier with regard to the just a follow-up on Representative Lewick's. How much money did MPCA, and if she said this, I apologize, how much money did MPCA spend in the previous year on the PolyMet legal case?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Fabian, for that question. I apologize I do not have that dollar amount at my fingertips, but I will get it in an email to the members of the committee ASAP.
And members of the committee, we're hoping that, Representative Fabian, that when we get the mini forecast next week, we will have a better idea on general fund, and this bill would be there. We know that we're probably going to get a supplemental budget from the governor. So I know it's a priority for the agencies, but we don't have that right now. One final thing, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this goes to the PFAS study that MPCA is doing, the money for that. What's going to be the target of the study? I'm curious, and I have one real quick thing to add to that, if I could.
Why don't you just add it right now?
Okay, so my question is we're doing a PFAS study. We have the PFAS language in there from the Claflin bill. About the food packaging and so forth. And we're banning all that stuff, and I think that some of it is really quite unneeded because it talks about straps and buckles and pallets and all that stuff. Why would we proceed with the study and then do the ban at the same time when we don't have the information that MPCA needs for the study and how much money do they need for that?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The request of funding for the study of from LCCMR was $1.4 million. That study is kind of an applied research project looking for strategies that can be used to manage PFAS in land-applied biosolids. So we're trying to develop strategies that will help businesses, communities, municipalities manage PFAS in biosolids. There are a couple other points of research, but it is research that will advance our knowledge. We do not need more research. We are not doing research about whether or not PFAS exists elsewhere or is out there or what form it's in. We already have a lot of that data. What we're trying to study here is something that hasn't been studied yet anywhere, and that is kind of how do these PFAS move in the groundwater and in the soil.
I would renew my motion that House File 4554, is that correct, would be as amended, be sent to the Ways and Means Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Hansen.
Aye.
Claflin.
Aye.
Fabian.
No.
Backer. Becker. Becker Finn.
Yes.
Eklund.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Heintzman.
No.
Lee.
Yes.
Lewick.
No.
Morrison.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Purcell.
Purcell, aye.
Purcell, aye. Sandell.
Aye.
Sundin.
Yeah, no, these don't. The med's going to last until 16, 17-year-old.
Sundin.
Aye.
Tice.
No.
Wagenius.
Aye.
Backer. Representative Backer. The current count is 11 ayes, 6 nays.
The motion is adopted.
Yeah, no.
Well, Representative Backer was voting while I called that. So, Mr. Schwartzweller, what's the final count?
11 ayes, 7 nays.
With Representative Backer?
Correct.
Motion is adopted. We are adjourned.